Welcome to Season 2 of Beyond the Wall, a Game of Thrones LCG podcast brought to you by Istral and Darknotch. We'd like to thank FFG and CardGameDB for their continued support, and the fantastic AGOT community as a whole for being the sole reason we do this cast. Thank you for letting us take you once again beyond the wall.
Welcome to another episode of Beyond the Wall. We'll have a quick intro, then we're going to talk to James about the Battle of Blackwater Bay. We're going to talk with Lauren about the Tyrell article that went up. And then we're going to have some town crier segments for the two big European tournaments, and then some closing comments.
All right, John, this is episode 26. It's a very special episode. Why is it a special episode, John?
Because it's the episode before Gen Con.
You excited?
I'm pretty excited. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. And I can't wait to just hang out with everyone and play some games. And I have a Joust deck that I decided on, but me and Alex are still building our melee deck.
Yeah, we'll talk a little bit about Gen Con. But maybe first of all, the news, because this is what you need to know before you jump into Gen Con. What has happened under this FAQ?
We've had two tournaments. One of them pretty big.
Two? We've had four.
All using the new FAQ?
All using the new FAQ.
Wow.
So tell me the two that you know of.
Well, Blackwater Bay, that was won by a D-Pit.
It was won by Dragon Pit that was occasionally running Aegon's Hill, and they beat a Lani Darkwing's Dark Words. No, a Lani No Agenda in the final.
Lani No Agenda, yeah.
That's right, yeah.
The Lani Darkwing's Dark Words actually won in Tulsa.
Running Rivers.
Rivers are good still.
Well, you've been on the cast last week, apparently. Where we were there saying I had to invite a whole bunch of Germans on to replace you, and then we decided that rivers were bad.
Oh, you guys were wrong.
We were wrong, clearly. I think that was a final against a Targ HOD Aegon's Hill that was also running Dragon Pit. So Shadows and Dragon Pit, but that by default it was typically going for Aegon's Hill as its HOD location. The two other tournaments that I have information from are Portland, where a Greyjoy Blacksails lost to a Targ Knights of the Hollow Hill, running the Fear of Winter in the final. And the Chilean regional in Viña del Mar, which was won by a Baron No Agenda by Francisco, who, of course, will be there at Gen Con as well.
We could expect him probably running that same deck.
I mean, this is not what I expected. I did not expect to see the FAQ have, especially the Battle of Blackwater Bay, which we talk about a little later, to have so little Martell. I honestly did not expect Dragon Pit to be this much of a presence because, well, every FAQ we say it's going to be, and it isn't. And this FAQ we didn't say it was going to be. Looks like.
Oh, you guys should have had me on. I would have said Dragon Pit was going to be all over.
It would have been great if you were available. What does this tell you for Gen Con? Do you think this influences Gen Con? Do you think people's decks are already picked? Do you think they go, oh, look at all that Pit. I tech against Pit. Ruins Pit. I mean, how does that happen?
If you're changing your deck, you know, the night before, unless you had a couple that you were trying to make a choice between, I don't think that's a good idea. So I would stick with whatever you're choosing. I've already cemented in, you know, even though I basically built it this week after all this testing.
We've got a lot of test games in. I'm cemented as well. I picked my deck on Monday, so I feel pretty good about that.
Yeah, I think I picked mine 2 days after you or something.
Yeah.
Later. But it's going to be fun. I think that's what really matters. I think it's going to be hard to call the meta. I do expect a lot more Martell than we've seen in these other events. Europe tends to play a little bit less Martell. Tulsa was a small regional, so it's hard to get a pulse from that. I think Martell and Lannister are kind of house favorites for Gen Con and for the U.S., so I think we'll see a bunch of it. And really, the Martell is still extremely strong.
Sivas is just a great card. Just
now,
phenomenal.
I know a lot of people around here and some of the people I was talking with are teching for Martell because they're expecting it to be such a large prevalence. So maybe they're going to reduce that tech based on these other tournaments, but I doubt it. I think they're just going to run, assuming that Martell is going to still show up in force. And I hope there's some good Dragon Pits because it's a great deck and I'd like to see it win more.
You're running city plots, aren't you?
I'm running something that beats Pit, Alex.
Okay. I'm running something that doesn't. So we're clearly at odds here. So and there we go. Aside from Gen Con, which is sort of a really awkward thing to say, aside from Gen Con, but the cast has come a ways. We hit our 500th like this week.
Yes, and we put something up on our Facebook page so that everyone could check out some an alternate art back for the new Beyond the Wall 2.0 cards done by Sean.
Yeah,
Thesaurus Rex.
It's still, we don't have high-res versions and stuff yet. We're going to need to get the cards, scan them properly, and work off that. But we did a sort of mock-up based on the images we could get in the tutorial video. And I really like the look. So if you haven't seen it yet, check it out on our Facebook page. And if you haven't liked us yet, apparently my dogs disagree with that.
Or they were actually attempting to like us, Alex.
I'm a bad translator.
Yeah. We didn't talk about a very important part of Gen Con. We talked about what we thought we were going to see in the Joust, but what about Melee?
Well, I don't know. We're still working on our Melee decks. We have no idea.
But I expect a lot of people just to cut and paste the Melee decks from, you know, the top 16 at Worlds.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. We haven't had an FAQ in that time. And everything that I saw at my final table is still viable and phenomenal. And even most of what I saw, in fact, everything I saw in my semifinal table except the Foam Drinker deck, which I don't think can be played now with the errata to Maiden's Bane and the Naval Escort.
Is super viable and good. Yep.
Yeah. Which basically means that Melee, as usual, is a wild card. It's going to be a lot of fun. But I think the more you tech against one thing, the more you realize that you can't cover all your bases. You just have to play a deck that interacts with the other players in a way that you can do something, even on turn 6 or turn 2, and that you can enjoy the match.
Yep.
Speaking of national tournaments, did you hear the news about Canadian Nationals?
I don't want to talk about that, Alex.
You don't want to talk about that. Well, I feel like we should at least mention it, because I don't think... Yes.
All right. Everyone, don't go to Vancouver for Canadian Nationals.
Do we have a date, too, that they're not supposed to go to Vancouver for?
No.
I think it's during a convention. It's on August 14th or 15th, that weekend. And, yeah, I mean, if you're in Portland or Vancouver or, you know, Washington State and you play Game of Thrones...
You can drive up, play the other five people.
Exactly. Play the other five people and win yourself a national championship, by all means. And then come on the cast, and you will be the reigning Canadian champion.
I'll make fun of you.
Well, it's a small price. You know, come on the cast. Yep. He'll make fun of you. It is a disappointing decision to us. It also kind of means that Gen Con's likely to be my last games of 1.0.
Me too. It's the last 1.0 I'll ever play. Other than helping people test, I mean, for Worlds.
For Worlds and the like, that's true, that's true. But it probably means the cards go into storage.
You know what? I went down to New York to hang out with the New York guys, have a really good time, and I left my cards there. I left them for them so that if they wanted, they could use, you know, the spare cards to build decks, to test, whatever, because I'm not going to Worlds and a bunch of them are. So I have no collection. It's done.
You have no collection. You washed your hands of this.
I have no Game of Thrones in my house. Well, I'm going to be getting that in the Kingslayer.
That's right, yeah. There is one other item of news I want to touch on before we jump into the regular segments, and that's that there's not one, but two new podcasts that hit the air this week.
They're trying to compete with us? We'll allow it.
We'll allow it. This is part of – I know there's a lot of community resources that have reached out to me about using the Annals on their site, integrating things differently. I think as we get really closer and closer to 2.0's wide release and closer to Gen Con, you're going to see a couple of new fan sites that I happen to know are in the works. I don't know where traffic will wind up flocking in the end, a couple new podcasts, and that's great. The more places that people can find Thrones Online, the better. So I will mention both of these casts by name. One is The White Book. This is started by a set of young upstarts that claim that they have, 215 episodes, 221 episodes behind
them? I don't know how they did that. Like, a brand new podcast thinks they have 210 episodes or something. It seems ridiculous. I hear there's a world champion on it, though.
On their inaugural episode, he's not one of the regulars.
He is, yeah. I believe he all summer long, he's a regular.
All summer long. Okay. Well, summer in Canada ends in about a week, so we're
good.
There.
Yeah.
But no, congratulations to C1C. The new logo looks great. The new sound looks great. The new site that they have, the White Book Podcast, looks great as well. I urge you to check them out. And so we've published alongside this podcast for a long time. They're changing names. They're updating. I think that's only good for us. But the other one is brand new, actually new, and this is the Banter Behind the Throne.
Yes, it's a Spanish or Chilean.
No, this is two Brits.
Oh,
three
that's
Brits.
Right.
And last week, actually, they had a special guest, JC Walma, so they're poaching our guests. But we love them as well. I've listened to that second episode. I haven't listened to their first episode, where apparently they make fun of us, but I look forward to it. I heard those guys bantering while commenting on the Norwich Regional 2 weeks ago. They were a lot of fun. I expect the podcast will be as well. So if you're interested in that, in more podcasts, if you need to fill every day of your week, we're gradually getting there. You've got us on Mondays. I think Banter Behind the Throne on Wednesdays and The White Book on Fridays.
That's exciting.
So I'm currently interrupting listening to a podcast in which James Walmsley, have you heard of this man? James Walmsley is currently talking on this podcast that isn't ours.
Yeah, that was good.
So that was, I suppose that was before Blackwater Bay. What really matters is the aftermath. So James, as most of you already know, was involved in running the Battle of Blackwater Bay this year. He was giving the commentary on the stream as well, the expert commentary.
In places.
Was it not expert in places?
Undoubtedly.
So tell us a little bit about how it went.
I think it went brilliantly. First of all, I just want to say, since you mentioned that I was one of the organizers, I want to give credit where credit's due, because I actually didn't do too much of the organization. Most of the organization was covered by Tagore and also Vince, a few of the other members of our meta, like Jamie Bamfield, Dave Bamford. They all helped put together the prize support. So I just want to put out thanks to them, because they actually did probably more of the organization than I did. They just didn't actually TO on the day. So, but yeah, as far as the tournament itself, it went very well. We had 52 people for the joust on the Saturday, which is down from last year, but we had more people from the UK this year than we did last year, which is good, we think. And most people stayed around for the Sunday as well. We had 32 for the melee.
This is the second year this has gone on, the second of many, presumably. Then this is the second year it's acted as a Road to Stalag tournament, correct?
Yes.
So that means that the winner got accommodation and a first round bye at the tournament in November.
Yeah, that's correct.
Excellent. And again, you had some more internationals drop by. I saw that Jakob Holtzman, last year's champion, who was then, at the time, crowned Giant Underwear, apparently did not win this time.
No, he made top eight. For the second year in a row, actually, our winner was undefeated the entire tournament. It was Luca Manfredini. I apologize to Luca if I mispronounced his surname, from Italy, playing Targ House of Dreams Dragon Pit. And he won the tournament by winning 10 games in a row undefeated, which was very, very impressive.
But it certainly is. So obviously there were a lot of eyes on the stream. When I was able to check it out, there were somewhere between 50 and 60 people listening to your sweet dulcet tones. and it seemed to go fairly well. I know that there were some hiccups earlier in the day, but I wasn't there, so they basically don't count for me.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's how it works. Yeah, we have the stream has been archived, I believe, on twitch.tv/darksphere twitch. And you can see that the earlier videos, there's lots of sort of 5 minutes ones of technical difficulties. And then from round four onwards, we sort of get a solid 4 hour stream together and then sort of proceed from there properly.
So obviously a lot of eyes are on this tournament in looking for how it's going to be an indicator for what we're going to see at Gen Con. I saw some description of the field. I saw that there seemed to be very few Martells, which really took me aback. I was extremely surprised given the bone they've essentially been thrown with this FAQ. I expected at the very least people to want to play with Savas and want to play with the Conclaves. That didn't seem to be the case.
No, it surprised me greatly as well. I remember on round two, people on the stream were asking, oh, can you put a Martell game on next round? And I was like, sure, I'll see which Martell decks are 2-0, and I'll find one and I'll put it on the stream. And it's like, okay, in this field of 52, we've got 4 people who are playing Martell, and the best, there's one of them on 1-2, and the others are all on 0-2. It's like, okay, maybe we won't put them on the stream just yet. And yeah, none of them did better than 3-3 in the end. I wish I could give you a simple explanation of why that was. I really don't know. I mean,
I think it's just they didn't have time to test. That generally isn't a limiting factor. So Martell wasn't there. What filled in the gaps? What was there?
There was a fair amount of Targaryen at the top. There was quite a lot of Lannister. The other houses were, for the most part, reasonably evenly split. There wasn't sort of a great deficiency of one house or another, or at least it didn't feel like to me, other than obviously Martell. So I think all of them gained a little at Martell's expense. Possibly Stark, a little light on the ground. I believe there's only one Stark deck that made the top 16, although that was piloted by Rowan, who went on to make the top 4. So I think Stark is still in a very good place. They just weren't played so much. I think possibly the explanation for the lack of Stark is that a lot of players were disillusioned somewhat after the Mirror Errata. I don't think anyone wanted to sort of be the ones to put their feet in the waters as far as seeing how much the Errata to how her Shadows works hurt her, and thus the deck. But it seems like obviously the utility's lost, but at the same time she is still the panacea for Stark. She still answers every card that can be a problem for Stark. So Rowan used her to great effect.
I feel like Lannister and Martell are sort of inversely correlated, because especially with things like Fury of the Sun can really make that tempo play against Lannister early on, and all
the
Martells are
Fury
running
of the
it.
Lion.
And likewise Fury of the Lion. I feel like I'm surprised that swung in favor of Lannister. I would have said, had I been asked 2 days ago what I expected Gen Con to say, a fair bit of Martell, not so much Stark. Lannister pushed under a little bit by the Martell, although it's always a popular choice. And I really wouldn't have picked a Dragon Pit to win it. So apparently I know nothing.
To be honest, I feel like Dragon Pit is a vulnerable deck, but the version that Luca and also Marco played, and Marco made top 8 and was only knocked out by Luca, so this wasn't a fluke. Although Luca is a fantastic player, that deck is a very strong deck. I think the deck is beatable if you have the means to answer the Dragon Pit, but it turned very few decks that were doing well enough to be at the upper end of the Swiss pairings were able to answer it.
The other thing is that I assumed that with Maesters being a little more popular, that we'd be seeing a fair bit of cities just all around as an answer to Maesters and as part of the city plotline for the Maesters, which puts a lot of pressure on that Dragon Pit to get an exceptional first 3 turns, which isn't always easy.
It's not always easy, but they do play the deck very aggressively. For example, in the final, Luca opened with Threat from the North to clear Wedge's board, and was able to stop Wedge from getting any challenges of his own, despite Luca having a slightly poor start. I know in other matches of theirs that I saw, they typically tried to wipe the board effectively turn 1 and then play Fear of Winter turn 2. And by the time you get to round 4, they've done a lot of damage. And even if you do a City Besieged away the Dragon Pit at that point, typically it's too late by then. They've already destroyed your hand, destroyed your character base, kept stuff back for themselves.
One thing I really like about that deck is that play, the Taking Captive into Fear of Winter. I think that is an incredibly potent play that I've been seeing recently over the last sort of 2 to 3 weeks. And I think it almost justifies not running Preston, or, it makes that kind of thing quite interesting.
Yeah, I completely agree with that.
So were there any decks that really stood out to you that surprised you to see them either do so much better than you were expecting, or just really interesting entrances to the field that we hadn't seen before?
We saw some interesting stuff. There's a deck that Matt Cannon has posted on AGOT cards. It is Stark Night's Watch, all 3 agendas. He's been playing it for a year or so, but I think sort of he viewed Blackwater as the culmination of being able to play it. And he was 4th, I believe, or 5th after the Swiss, having only lost 1 game through the entirety of the Swiss. And sadly, he had to drop because he had a train to catch, so he wasn't able to play in the cup. But I think that was a very strong and unusual deck that, unfortunately, we weren't able to feature on the stream.
This was the Night's Watch deck running 3 copies of the 4-cost neutral wall.
Yes.
And then jumping people in. That's, I mean, one of
yes,
my pet decks
also
a long time ago was that. In my first Worlds, my first tournament yes. ever in person, I was playing a Greyjoy version of that same
thing. Yeah, you played it out of Maesters, I believe?
I did. I played it out of Maesters. And the thing is, the wall is really, really, really hard to get rid of. You can't newly made lord it. You can't. I mean, it's just almost. It's unique. It can't be stolen by a whole bunch of these skill effects.
Yeah,
it's
very difficult to build up the cities when it's four cost. There's so many things that can't hit it. But yeah, I also, because obviously it's very hard to win challenges against it, and because the wall isn't a response, he was able to also run that neutral iron throne we were talking about and put that to very good use. And I know he won numerous games by him being able to just keep that wall standing and, you know, rub off all the kneel and all that sort of thing. Yeah, he had a game, his round one game, someone went up to them about 40 minutes in and saw two plots revealed and was like, oh God, I knew this was going to be a slow deck. How are you still only on plot two? And they were like, you might think the answer is they were on their second plot cycle. They weren't on their second plot cycle. They were on their third plot cycle. It ended with with Matt having revealed 20 plots.
Wow. He got a full win. Look at that deck, though. That does seem pretty neat. He was not running Desolate Passage, which really surprises me.
Yeah,
such an insanely good plot with that wall.
It is.
Because the characters don't count as being declared as defenders.
Yeah. Other interesting decks that we had. You'll notice if you go on his deck in Agorkaz, his first round match was against a Greyjoy House of Dreams 10 Towers deck. That was piloted by Josh Chambers. He finished 2-4. This is the original 10 Towers, the one that lets you play the top card of your opponent's discard pile.
And it isn't a Greyjoy card and therefore turns itself off.
Oh, no, he had answers for that. He was running, because the 10 Towers only requires you to run Greyjoy characters and locations. So he had three copies of Imposter, which lets you kneel an influence to make the opponent, to make the attached character the affiliation of your choice.
This is amazing.
We'd worked on this together somewhat, and yeah, he made some excellent plays. It didn't happen in the tournament, unfortunately, but in a practice game, he was able to wait until bait his opponent into doing a three-claim military challenge, then use Confession to discard Red Vengeance from his opponent's hand, and Red Vengeance the three-claim military challenge, which, yeah, there's a lot of fun plays that deck can make. He also ran Common Cause and managed to get up to claim four in a deck that's meant to only be able to run Greyjoy characters.
This is amusing.
That's what he was going for.
It certainly is.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think. There were plenty of other fun decks. I mean, we had one thing I really liked is we had four different houses represented in the top four. We had obviously the Targ Pit that won. We had Alani N.A., the Stark Kindly Man of Rowans, and also Joseph's Greyjoy Black Sails, which I know is a deck close to your heart again, Alex.
Yeah. I saw that on the stream as well.
Yeah. We had a couple of Baratheon decks also doing well. Obviously, Jakob Lossen in the top eight. We also had a Baron Knights of the Realm did well. So there was quite a wide variety of decks. I mean, the game obviously is so advanced at this point, it's hard to say. That was a really unexpected deck. I've never seen a deck like that before, just because pretty much every deck has sort of been envisioned and played by now when it comes to sort of conventional joust decks. But there weren't any, other than, again, obviously Martell, there weren't any decks that seemed to sort of crash and burn and not get the chance to feature. So it was good to see.
Any thoughts on how the result of this will affect Gen Con or reflect Gen Con or some other verb?
Something Gen Con, yeah. I don't know. I think people will probably have another look at that Dragon Pit. I haven't heard much talk about it, which is rare because after every FAQ, as you know, Alex, everyone always says, Dragon Pit's in a really good place right now. And this is the first time I've not heard that, and it wins a 52-person tournament going undefeated all day. So clearly it's sort of like predictions of how well Dragon Pit will do are like a barometer of how well it will actually do.
Inverse correlation, yeah.
I think the Bannerman, if there'd been a proper Bannerman deck there, they might have struggled a bit with that, possibly. So that could be a good answer to Dragon Pit if people are looking at it. Equally, I'm sure that will be teched against by a lot of people. I think the signs that I take there are obviously Dragon Pit, people have overlooked it. But then we've also seen quite a few powerful decks sort of that have done well, but obviously not necessarily featuring on the stream or, making top four. You know, a lot of strong decks in the top eight and top 16 that just sort of met a rough match in the cup, but that I think are perfectly viable decks to win Gen Con. Like we saw Greyjoy No Agenda, Greyjoy Maesters, Baron Knights of the Realm, Targ aloof and apart, Barrow aloof and apart, Lani Darkwings, all these traditional decks that you'd expect to do well, I think, are all also viable options. So ultimately, my take from Blackwater for Gen Con would be that the meta is wide open, which is very unhelpful, I know.
It's very unhelpful, but it's somewhat reassuring because there were doomsayers that were saying that pulling Conclave off was just going to break things. And I don't think it has, or at least not yet.
I saw one Conclave on the table. Also, no, two Conclaves. There was one on the stream in round 5,
yeah,
where it lasted one round and got Valored away.
Yeah.
Although it shouldn't
have gotten Valored away. It was a misplay, but yes.
Well, yes. And then in the top 16, I saw a Conclave get Seductive Promised, and those are the only two times I actually saw a Conclave all day. So
it hasn't broken the meta yet.
Not yet. Maybe if it gets played a bit more, it will. But I think a lot of people were very disappointed that the anti-Conclave tech that they included in their decks didn't get a chance to fire off. I know multiple people added copies of Egrets that previously hadn't been there.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for joining us, James. We're joined today for the very last of the AGOT 2.0 spoiler articles by... Well, we've mentioned her on the cast a lot as the Fitch that wins. Is that still true, Lauren?
No, you guys jinxed me, and Britt won the New England Regional.
All right, Tyrell, what first impressions, Lauren? What made you reach out to us and say, I want to be there for the Tyrell article?
Well, I'm just really excited about this faction. Looking at the cards that have been spoiled, I think it looks like a really interesting faction and one that's going to be strong both as a primary faction and as a banner faction. And being a sort of shaggy player.
Not shaggy.
Excellent.
I really like the potential for some fun combos coming out of this house. But I think that what's nice about the cards is although there's some potential for fun combos, especially further down the line when we get more cards, I think a lot of the cards also stand pretty well on their own. So I think this is going to be a strong house in the core set environment, definitely.
It's the house that strength matters in, right?
The strength matters thing kind of gets to me a little bit. It's no worse than the Greyjoy rise again harder and stronger. I mean, growing strong and then making it be about strength pumps is a little heavy-handed.
Oh, no, it's not. It's cool.
It's a little on the nose, but I think that the way they've done it is nice and it's not as boring as it could have been.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, they've actually made effects that trigger off these strength pumps. If it was just, about making your characters bigger, it wouldn't be cool. But when we look at cards like... Randall Tullery, who will stand.
Try that again.
No, Randall Tarley?
Yay!
Woohoo, who has renown and will stand when strengths are increased. It's a lot cooler.
Yeah.
For me, I think that Lauren started to touch on it in saying that they're going to be a really good banner faction and they'll be fine loyal. I think they seem like one of the strongest banner factions. The cards that we've seen that are loyal are not necessarily their strongest. Marjorie is a 3-cost, she's non-loyal, and she's got great stats just by default, and she's got that strength pump.
And great art.
Not loyal, Heartsbane is not loyal, Baron the Maiden Fair is not.
The Wardens of the Reach, the army, also non-loyal.
I mean, the Wardens of the Reach get strength based on Reach cards. How many non-loyal Reach cards are there?
Yeah, we've got Highgarden, and that's hard.
Oh, that's true.
Now, now that we've gotten to this point in the card pool and seen so many of the spoilers, though, there's a really, really shaggy shagga. Oh, God, I've done it as well. used for the Baron and the Maiden Fair, and that's to stack your opponent's deck so you can use the tickler and then discard a card, of which it's a duplicate.
Is really? Alex, awesome? The tickler?
Yes.
Yeah. You should build a deck around that. I mean, that'll win.
Definitely build a deck around
that. 100% sure. Super witty move by Alex.
Interactions are kind of neat.
Neat, but not useful.
There is another card that stands out that I think is incredibly versatile, and that's Highgarden for me. Seeing a lot of the 3-cost locations be draw locations, this one is not. But the versatility in this one is just amazing. pay gold, choose an attacking character, or stand and remove them from the challenge. This is great on your opponent's characters. It's great on your own after your opponent hasn't declared defenders or whatever, and you can pull them back out. But it works really, really well with the plot we've seen, Jousting Contest, where they can only attack with one character to start with.
Highgarn's very good.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's good that they've made it loyal so that you can't play Highgarden and Gasting Grey in the same deck.
Same deck. That would be extremely annoying.
And, I mean, Tyrell has a fantastic 7-cost character in the Queen of Thorns. The fact that when you win an injury challenge, which she can probably do herself with 5 strength, you get to play another Tyrell character with printer cost 6 or lower, seems like a huge resource advantage that the Tyrell can have under their belt, which is super deadly, actually, right? Because they're the faction that had all this money and was able to fund all these things for the Lannisters because of it. So I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, and she also combos really nicely with the event card named after her, Olenna's Cunning, which I think you can play first after you win the Intrigue Challenge to search for a character at the top of your deck and then use Olenna to put that character into play.
Yeah, no one's ever going to name character if you trigger it then, though, right? If you just won the challenge, I mean, it's fine. Digging for
an event,
the closest comparison we have is to be a wolf from the first edition, where when someone played to be a wolf, by default, they were saying event, because you didn't want them to go get another one. Here, getting another one isn't a big deal, because there isn't a second effect, but I think people will say character. It's especially early on in the game, I think people will not let Olenna's Cunning search for a character, especially in the situation where you just won
with Queen of Thorns.
Yeah. You could try to be sneaky and win the power challenge first and play the event.
Yeah, that's actually a good point.
And then use Olenna, but people might be on the lookout for that. But in any case, I think that a lot of the cards that we've seen spoiled work really nicely together.
Yeah, if they say character at that point and you haven't attacked with Queen of Thorns, they might get hit by a Tears of Lys.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's actually, and that's another card spoiled in this article, and that's a very, very valid point. At that point, you have to have 3 gold lying around or Paxter having sit to reduce one of your events by 1.
Yep.
But that's perfectly feasible. Tears of Lys, I think, is a big, big card.
I think it will define the meta at the beginning of the game.
And Tears of Lys, right?
Yep.
So let's talk about them. Which is better? Why? How do they compare?
It's tough. I mean, both are conditional in different ways. But I think Tears is probably a little bit better in the fact that it'll probably hit more people. Now, all that being said, there's Little Bird in the environment, and that might force people to run that attachment. I think we'll have to play with it a bunch before we find out what's better.
Yeah, so it looks like Put to the Sword is more conditional than Tears of Lys, which I think you only need to win the Intrigue Challenge versus Put to the Sword, you need to win by 5 or more. And I think in general, there are more factions that have Intrigue deficiencies than those that have military deficiencies. So I think the odds of getting Tears of Lys to fire are better than it is for Put to the Sword.
Especially with the only 1 gold. If your opponent holds 2 golds, you're not going to let them win a challenge by 5 or more, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, interestingly, I wonder if the costs on those 2 events should have been swapped, because I think it is going to be a little bit harder to get Put to the Sword to fire.
Well, I suspect the reasoning against that would be that the Tears of Lys action is delayed, so they'll still get to use the character that phase, and if you happen to do military after that, then they can use it for claim.
They'll just sack, yeah, that character, exactly.
Because he's already marked for death, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, but then you haven't gotten quite the same mileage as you had before. You basically sort of dragon-feared the character with an Intrigue icon instead of...
Which is nice. I mean, it's still a very balanced way of killing someone, I think. Much better than just killing them outright.
Have we seen any ways to remove tokens from characters other than returning that character to your hand?
We have. I mean, yeah, in the rules it says that whenever the character leaves play or whenever a card leaves play, all the tokens on it are removed, which I think matters for quite a lot of things like what is that plot, Power Behind the Throne? If you didn't use the stand token for one reason or another, it doesn't just keep it in your plot pile, which is probably good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Waiting for use.
But you could definitely imagine this being the kind of thing that a maester could interact with. That you could have, if more poisons are going to get used down the road.
Yeah, then, to remove those tokens. Yeah, that'd be cool.
Chaselis and Foot to the Sword are the only two forms of neutral targeted kill that we've seen so far in a valorless environment.
That makes them big.
That means that they're big. Does that mean you have to run one or the other? Or do you have an alternative?
No, you have to run on the other.
Yeah, I agree.
Unless, I mean, we haven't seen all the cards. There's a few that are still missing. So maybe there's a third choice. Maybe there's a power that does the same.
If you're Targ, you can probably, I don't know if you can count on Dracaris alone and some of your burn for targeted kill. And then if you're...
Okay, maybe Targ might have other options.
And that's about it, I think. Yeah, I think you do sort of have to run one or the other.
But even in Targ, they have so much military strength that it seems like it would still be a good option for them to run Foot of the Sword.
Oh, yeah, with people like Jorah that are almost single-handedly winning that challenge.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have, like you said, Tyrell themselves have the strength pumps that could allow them to surprise win by five and then pull off these events as well. So I can see what Nate's getting at with his sort of article of saying there's more than meets the eye. It's not just strength, right? It gives you that threat of playing the event. It gives you that threat of winning big off the challenge by doing more. And in fact, mm-hmm. I think the partial spoil that we've seen of the Mander, not in this card fan, but in the tutorial video, said some sort of reaction about winning by five or more strengths with the word draw in it. So again, obviously, if it's like winning an intrigue challenge by five or more strength, that's really not that easy to do when it's broadcast. But when you have the strength pumps, it becomes a lot easier.
I'm definitely looking forward to seeing what's on the rest of that card.
The rest.
I'm curious whether it's intrigue challenge or just win any challenge by five or more strength.
If it's any challenge, then it's a very, very good card.
Well, what are the restrictions on the other draw locations?
Well, one is unopposed challenges, and it's draw one card.
One of them is just winning power. Draw two cards.
No, it's not losing
power. Well, not losing power, so winning all the power.
Draw a little later.
That's the same thing, Alex, actually. You win all the power, or you lose a power, and then you don't get it, so... And it's two draw.
And that's two draws.
Yeah.
When the intrigue is a draw.
That's right, for Lannister, yeah.
Yeah, I could see it going either way. It will be difficult to win a challenge by five or more strength when you have that location on the board, because your opponent's going to see that, and drawing two cards is such an advantage, they're going to do everything they can to make sure that you don't win by five or more.
Now, we hit the good fortune of recording a little later because 2C1C actually spoiled Maester Lomas's full text. I don't know if you guys had a chance. Sorry, the White Book spoiled Maester Lomas's full text.
Okay, so now that we're talking about the White Book / 2C1C, since they changed names, does that mean they start back at one episode, Alex?
See, that's the first thing I said. I think that it's cheating for them to be on episode 211.
They shouldn't be at 211. They should be at 1, because when I changed names for Summer's Coming, we started again.
Wow. I'm really the defining feature of this cast.
Oh, yeah, I forgot that.
Anyway, Maester Lomas is a maester, three-cost monocon, and they seem to like him on that cast. I'm not sure I do. He says, after you win an intrigue challenge as the defending player, discard one card at random from the attacking player's hand. I mean, winning challenges on defense is hard. The strength pumps help, but are you going to waste them just to discard a card?
Yeah. Like, are you going to stop every chump challenge that sends across from you that won't matter, especially in turn one? Someone's like power challenge you for one, you're going to be like, oh no, I got to block that.
Well, if you could win by five or more, maybe you would discard a card from the opponent's hand and draw two.
That's a fair point. Yeah,
I guess. All right. All right, Lauren. I'll give you that. You're much more smart than Alex.
Is he loyal, did they say?
No, he is not loyal.
Oh.
Okay, so there's a fair number of non-loyal cards in Tyrell that we've seen.
Yeah.
I would hope that FFG designed all the factions to have the same number of loyal cards.
I don't think it's the number that matters as much, because as we saw with Targ, it didn't matter how many cards were loyal. The fact that Danny was in the Dragon's Guard
right.
sort of broke the module apart. And I could also see there being a design philosophy to say, okay, early on in the game, we don't want Targ to be a very good faction to banner to. They don't have a lot of support from, and they're not supporting any other houses, really. And, you know, we sort of want their identity to be set apart in the East. While Tyrell, on the other hand, we want them to be a very good supporting faction. That's what they do in the books. That doesn't mean that you don't want to play Tyrell as your main faction. That would be a stupid design decision. But to say that this is one that you might see more often as a support faction, that doesn't bother me at all.
Yeah, I think it's quite good with several houses. I don't know if it'll be the most popular, because I think Lannister is still looking very good. But I think we'll see it quite a lot, just because the number of non-loyal cards that are good seems quite high. And the strength bumps are going to be very useful, as well as the renown on Randall and the Knight of Flowers, which is going to help speed up a game that looks like it'll probably be a little slower to start with.
Have we seen any faction with two renowned characters? Yes, Stark had Eddard and Robb Stark, but no other faction. So Tywin and Jaime doesn't really count, because Jaime didn't really have renown. He only has renown during military challenges. And so this may be, especially with the strength pumps that can boost things like Valon from, or Valon, I still haven't decided, from Greyjoy. This may be a very, very good banner faction for Greyjoy as well, if we're trying to push that rush angle. A very good banner faction for Lannister, if you're trying to push the intrigue thing, because they certainly have that going for them.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm
very good for Martell. There's, I think, five lords and ladies that will be pumped by Doran's effect, and then the
Doran's Martell only. Only Martell characters. Martell.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Which is a bit of a wasted design space, I think. It'd be really cool if he did. But the strength pumps will interact with things like Doran's game that you want to trigger by five or more.
And the Red Viper.
So we have two more cards to spoil. Unfortunately, no. Let's read them first, and then I can give my sad opinion about them. So, Lauren, care to read them both at
sure.
the same time, maybe?
I'll go in alphabetical order. How's that sound?
All right.
So I'm starting with Left. It's a two-cost, two-strength character with a military icon, non-loyal. He is a guard. No attachments except weapon. While you control right, left gets +1 strength, gains a power icon, and does not kneel when declared as a defender. And then we have right, who is also 2 cost, 2 strength, also has a military icon, non-loyal. No attachments except weapon. While you control left, right gets +1 strength, gains an intrigue icon, and does not kneel when declared as a defender. I have to say, I really like these characters. They are low cost, which is great in these decks that have so many high cost characters. You know, they're really only decent on their own, but I think that when they're on the board together, they're very good, which is the intent.
I think they're just good for their cost. Like, even running these characters alone, I think will have a high impact.
Mm-hmm. There's just not that many two-cost characters in the game, so these are going to be very helpful.
I'm not entirely sold. I will say the first thing that I really do like about them is this is another case where they've split up an art piece. So these are clearly the same guards that are appearing in Olenna and the Queen of Thorns herself, and we can just make them out a little bit on that card, and we can just make the Queen of Thorns out on left and not on right. And this answers the long-standing question, is left relative to Queen of Thorns, or is left relative to us when we're looking at the Queen of Thorns?
Oh my goodness. Who cares?
Well, she named them, so it's clearly her left and her right.
Yeah, and that's what they went with.
Yeah.
Characters are all that great. Let's look at other two costs. For instance, the Direwolf Pup seems like he's alone, he's better.
No.
You can trigger like warm rain off him.
Oh, whoa. Okay,
right?
Now you're saying the Direwolf Pup is good because of the situational event that you're probably not running.
It doesn't
good.
Matter. He still has the threat of being dangerous. You save a gold while you have a Direwolf Pup on the board.
People get scared.
You spend 2 gold for Jorah, that's better. You spend 2 gold for...
Jorah's good, I agree.
Viserion, I think he is. I can't remember which dragon is which, but I think he's 2 gold, and he's better. He's a Vicon. And so I think there's a lot of, I mean, you can't necessarily run all these in the same deck, so
yeah.
For a while these will fill out a cost slot, But I think it's very rare that you use Olenna's Cunning to go get the twin, because you've got better cards to look for. And I think that when you have them on the board, they're most likely to be the chud that dies to military claim. So I don't think you're often going to get that synergy. The synergy is good. Not kneeling to defend is a pretty big deal, especially if they're both Vicons. That deprives people of a lot of unopposed challenges. That sounds good. But I think you're going to so rarely get the synergy, and the characters are not that good to start with. I'm not terribly impressed with them.
I don't know. I disagree. If they're both on the board, then you'll have four strength in a military challenge that doesn't kneel. So
six strength on that, because they each get plus one.
Great. So you'll have six strength available to defend a military challenge, and they won't have to kneel for that. So that'll make it a lot more difficult for your opponent to win that military challenge and for them to be picked off for military claim.
Mm-hmm. But I don't think you're running dupes of these by default, are you?
It depends how much you want setups. Like, these are great setup cards, and we haven't seen... I know you named a few, but there aren't that many other good two-cost slots. So like you said, they fill a very important slot in this game right now.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, looking at, for example, Baratheon, they don't have any two-cost characters.
Do they not have... Did we not see Crescent? I don't think we know what he does.
They're better than all Lannister two-costers.
Greyjoy has one.
What? Oh, Maester Wendemir, who has stealth.
Cost, he has one icon.
Yes, so do these guys.
Well, sure. But, I mean, I think if you think that Maester Wendemir is good, then I think these guys are also good.
And I think Maester Wendemir is good, so I buy in, Lauren. Alex, woo! I believe you also said Maester Wendemir was good.
Yeah, Maester Wendemir has stealth. These guys don't.
Oh,
these
my
guys
God.
Have no attachment except weapon. No, I have to.
I'm dying. We know from 1E that's a good thing, actually. No attachment is good, but for weapon.
Well,
not bad.
If they're wasting their milk of the poppy on these guys, that would be
They can't
great.
Milk of the poppy these guys.
Well, exactly. So wouldn't it be better if they could take a milk of the poppy?
No. You can't burn them with the equivalent of Hatchling Feast that's going to be in 2E or whatever. They're awesome. Just a minute. You can't flame kiss, yeah. That's what I meant to say.
All right. This is a good enough and interesting enough faction that I am seriously considering it for my Kingslayer deck.
Oh.
This might be a decent time to actually go over the fact that we do have the Kingslayer article, or the article explaining the rules for the Kingslayer deck building, where you mix two factions together straight out of the box in exactly the quantities they're in there. So 20 cards.
Add 10 neutral.
Add... Wow. Minimum of 10 neutral.
So 10 neutral.
So that's 3 King's Roads, 3 Rose Roads, and 4 other cards.
Yep.
Sorry, 3 King's Roads, 3 Rose Roads, 2 to 3 Little Fingers, and 1 other card.
Tears of Lys.
Tears of Lys, there you go.
Yeah.
And then you get to build your deck, and you can swap any of those choices, your neutrals, your plot card deck, and which factions you're using.
Every round,
so long as you're not slowing down the start of the next round.
Which is actually really cool, because it's going to, if you want, you can try every faction.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think it's a great way to introduce people to 2E. It's super simple, and I think it'll be a lot of fun. Thank you so much for joining us, Lauren. It was fun.
You're welcome.
So we're joined here today by Thomas, all the way from Poland. What brings you on the show today?
Well, I would like to invite all of you to come and join us on Fleabottom Fracas. It's third installment on Road to Stalek. I guess we have now 6 tournaments, but this one will be the best. And it is taking place on 15th and 16th of August this year.
As you said, this is the third installment, and these Road to Stalek tournaments, generally the prize is a first-round bye and accommodations at Stalek this year?
Yes, sure it is. And, you know, prizes in this tournament are famous. Last year's Men of Pride, for example.
Is still on our Facebook page. I thought that was phenomenal, having all the people that show up actually as part of the picture for the Men of Pride art cards. How did you guys manage to do that, to print them off?
Actually, it was like a surprise even for most of the Polish participants. There was a picture taken in before the first round of Joust. And at the end of the day, our printer made it possible. It all thanks to Łukasz.
Excellent. So this is, I mean, I presume that you guys are planning on doing this in subsequent years. This is the year that leads up to the last 1.0 Stalic tournament. What do you guys have planned to make this? I mean, you really impressed me last year. You've got to impress us again, or is it a surprise?
Well, there is a surprise prize that nobody knows about except Łukasz. So I can't, even if I knew, I couldn't have told. But from what I know, there will be like custom playmats for top 16 in Joust and top 4 in Melee. Of course, alternate art house cards, as always. They are also pretty popular. We have been shipping them even to the United States, because they were that popular. What else? I know that we also plan to be probably, well, except for Gen Con, probably the first tournament to give some prizes to be used in 2.0. Because, you know, we have these tokens now. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. There is a lot of field to. We have also...
I think when in Poland, one should do as the Poles and take advantage of your traditional beverages.
Yes, that is one for Saturday evening and probably Friday evening as well. It is integral part of the tournament. It is called Game of Shots.
Game of Shots. And how does one win or die at the Game of Shots?
There is only dying, I'm afraid.
There is only dying.
Yes, and on Melee, it's like, you know, you're in the scenery of Walking Dead, the series. Mm-hmm. Melee tournament on Sunday is really excellent.
All right. Well, I expect then, as you mentioned, 2.0, that this is also a tournament that we can expect to see next year and the year after and the year after that.
I truly hope so.
Do you know when Poland gets the core versions for 2.0, or do you know if there's going to be a localization effort?
There is a localization, and I think it's actually finished, but, you know, I don't know when they are starting, when they plan to get it on the market. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Probably we'll be playing English cards, but when we go to Stalek, we'll take Polish cards to take revenge on the French and Spanish bastards.
Yep, I know the feeling. And there are, in fact, some people who run around hunting for specific cards, like a French Heron Hall and things like that.
Yes, or Chinese cards.
Exactly. I like to think it's all in good spirits and good fun, but maybe not always. This is just a motivation to learn more languages, right?
Yeah, sure.
There you go. That's all we need. All right. Well, unfortunately, my Polish isn't good enough to read your cards. But thank you very much, Thomas, for joining us and promoting this tournament. This is the same weekend as the Nordic Championships, but the Nordic Championships do not give a bye to Worlds or to Stalic. So really, even the Nordics should be coming to your tournament.
Well, they would, but they said that they have to make, you know, attendance so big that they can set the date next year by themselves, not set, you know, by the distributor.
That almost sounds like a decent reason. Ah, gotta hate them for coming up with good logical reasons.
And it's good because, you know, Alex Rayback would come and he would take all the girls. So
okay, well, thanks again, Thomas.
Alex, can I shill our tournament that we are going to have in the end of August that we just made the announcement for? We are going to have the fourth edition of the Brawl at the Crossroads Inn, which is our annual tournament of the Munich Meta. This is the first year that it's going to be a two-day event. On Saturday, the 29th of August, we are going to have a great cube draft. I'm going to build a draft cube, which consists of cards from the whole 1.0 card pool, and we're going to have a draft tournament with that. Did some cube drafts from with 1.0 cards before. It was always great fun. This is going to be the best one yet. So, and on Sunday, the 30th of August, we're going to have our traditional Joust tournament. And yeah, if by any chance any of our listeners wants to come to beautiful Munich in the end of August, you're invited to join us at the Brawl. I'm sure Alex will be so kind as to link to the tournament information when he makes the announcement for the podcast on CardGameDB. Thank you for.
I do also want to mention that the alternate art card that you have, I think, is phenomenal.
Yes, of course. We are alternate art cards for the first time, and I've already had the physical cards in my hand, so the quality is very good. These are 1.0 cards, the Aftermath, so they are not going to see that much play, but I think they're very nice items to have for a collector. We have the Aftermath in two versions.
But I like particularly that you've taken these. I mean, that the artist is credited as unknown 1666.
Had a little bit of a recording glitch there, but just wanted to mention that I think that using period medieval or classical paintings is a really good idea for alt art cards, and I want to see more of that.
Closing comments, John. I was about to say there are no tournaments next week.
You were about to be wrong, because there's a big one next week.
I don't know how – it's like my list. I was looking at regionals, and I was looking at international tournaments, and for some reason just Gen Con did not show up.
Forgot the whole national thing, eh?
Yeah, I forgot Gen Con. Well, damn. There's Gen Con. That means a lot. Both John and I will be there, which also means that we are highly unlikely, dare I say, not – going to have an episode on the 3rd?
We will not have an episode on the 3rd.
We will not have an episode.
We will be just getting home on the 3rd.
Yeah, it's not going to happen. I don't think we'll have one that week. I think we'll wait a week before we get it up.
Yep.
We got a lot of things to...
And we'll talk all about our Gen Con experience.
And we'll have 2.0 core sets in hand, and we'll tell you guys about those. Also, both John and I, you may have noticed, are Canadian. We have, Canadian phones and things that don't work very well in the States. So chances are that there won't be a lot of feedback and update to the site, except maybe in the evenings when we get back to the hotel where we can add something to the Facebook page. We're going to try and enlist people around us to do that kind of thing, but really no guarantees.
There is one person that's supposedly doing like live streams and everything. So Dennis on at FFG Worlds, his Twitter feed, will be updating Twitter, but also doing a bunch of like videos.
And it's worth noting that Fantasy Flight Games themselves does a recap of the day at the end of every day that is worth checking out. Obviously, the next day they get these videos up. They talk about all of their games, the things they're selling, the in-flight report, that kind of stuff. And Team Covenant does a phenomenal job of covering Fantasy Flight Games stuff. So check out their YouTube channel as well.
And I think Rob St. John is also going down, and he's been taping everything, so I could see some of the stuff coming up on his YouTube channel as well.
Yeah, so you may get very good coverage. We're also not really going as media representatives. This is also worth noting. If we were, we'd be going to the in-flight report. We'd be going to some of these other things on the side. The in-flight reports during the joust, we really want to play in this goodbye tournament for Thrones. And I think hopefully you understand that as our listeners. The melee is the day before. We're going to be playing that. The Kingslayer is the day after. We're going to be that. So we won't have really the sort of media experience that you might hope for from a podcast. But, you've got us. What more do you need?
Yeah, and Alex is going to win it all. No
Alex
pressure, Alex.
Is going to win something. Yes. It probably won't be a first place in anything.
I'm winning the drinking contest.
I think the only way to win the drinking contest is to drink and watch the drinking contest. So I think I will be winning.
Because Sandy's not coming this year.
Sandy doesn't win drinking contests.
That's true, actually.
What Sandy does is start drinking contests. This is not the same thing at all.
Thank you for listening to Beyond the Wall. If you have any comments or would like to be featured on the cast, please let us know by email at beyondthewallpodcast@gmail.com or through Facebook at Beyond the Wall Podcast. If you've enjoyed the music, check out more of Antti Martikainen's work at the link embedded in the chapter data. See you all next week.